part of what I like to do as an educator, and I think this is always successful, is like participate. So like if you're doing the project along with the students, it's always going to be more powerful. And I think it's important to kind of show that like you're invested in the same way that they are and you're learning. And, you know, it puts everyone on the same playing field.
Hey there, class kickers, and welcome to another edition of the Kick Some Class podcast, the show designed to help you, the educator, kick some class, whether it's at home, in school, and in life. And in this episode, I've got a very special guest. His name is Tim Needles. He has so many accolades that I honestly don't even know that I should read them all, but he is a TEDx speaker. He speaks at tech conferences all over the place. He's gotten numerous awards. He's on the board of directors at NiceGate, a speaker at ISTE, just a leader in all things. He's gotten crazy awards as an art educator. And today we're going to be talking about some really awesome ways to put the A for arts into a STEM curriculum and really find a way to hook kids. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome my friend Tim Needles. Tim, hey, it's great to have you.
Thanks. Yeah, great to be here.
All right. So we were kind of chatting before we went live about NiceGate, and this was my first, I hate to say exposure, right? That's, that makes it sound bad, because I got exposed to Tim. But like his session on animation was just one of those ones that like I was ready to stop in the middle and just go out and run with some of those things. And we were talking about Brush Ninja was pretty awesome. So I actually walked in as you were exiting the stage for your TEDx. So I know that's going to come up later because I did go and watch it. And so I kind of want to let you talk about that as well. But I'm going to go back to Brush Ninja for a second. Sure. And just say, like, have you used that or another animation platform that's maybe in a counterintuitive or innovative way that might be really helpful for people to kind of be like, oh, that'd be awesome?
Yeah, you know, one of the incredible things about animation is that it's very easy to use in almost any setting. So, and it really, you know, I'm a big fan of visual storytelling. So like, if you want to really explain something well, you know, having a visual is really helpful. So, you know, we have done a lot of different uses of animation. My favorite kind of uses are, you know, like these kind of STEAM collaborations where we're learning science and then we're processing it through art and we're creating animations to actually show our learning. So use it as an assessment, which is kind of a fun way. And it's like, you know, what a great assessment. It's so much more fun than like, you know, a test or quiz.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so like some examples that like you said in science, which is cool. So for me, year 25 for me, most of those years, middle school science teacher. So, I mean, I have my ideas, but where would you use animation in a science classroom for somebody who's not maybe weirdly brained like you and I might be?
Well, you know, like we had a lot of success using it actually learning about space. So that was the really interesting use. I mean, space is an interesting thing. I'm a kind of a space nerd myself. I'm a NASA solar system ambassador. So like, you know, it's a lot of fun to kind of start there. And you know, there's so many interesting missions and sort of, you know, a lot of, you know, different grade levels kind of touch on some of these space ideas. So what we like to do is in the high school, we'll actually create animations and then bring them down to the elementary school to teach some of the younger students.
I love that model. And that it's funny because that's what we do with our sixth and seventh graders. As I said, how could you teach a classic storybook to a K-1 classroom that's just learning to read? And that's what we use Scratch for that, but animation, same deal, you know, like right. it could be done, you know? So that's really cool. So I saw the NASA thing and I was like, what, how do you become a NASA solar system ambassador?
Yeah, no, it's really crazy. It's a lot of fun. You know, I always was interested in space just from being a kid. And I'm an artist, but like, you know, I'm always curious and wanted to learn more. So, you know, when I was doing the book Steam Power, one of the things I wanted to do is like, obviously I believe, you know, art is important to STEM, but like, you know, it's more important to actually get some professional opinion. So like one of the things I did is I went to NASA and I requested some interviews with people and I talked to the people at NASA and, you know, some of just the questions and conversations we had actually led to, hey, do you know about this program that's for education? It comes out of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Yeah. So, you know, it's great because it's like they give you all of these resources about all of the missions that come out and everything is teachable. So it's a really fantastic program.
Yeah, it's funny. I just got connected this fall with the JPL. You know, you got to sound like you know what you're talking about, right? but it was through this elective class that we're running, which is where I'm doing all of this animation type stuff, Scratch, whatever, because it's an open-ended class. The kids can do whatever they want. And when we first posed the question, like, all right, the class is yours, I was all excited, right? And we could do whatever you want. And I just crickets. That they'd never been given any control, right? Like to actually go and do it. And so I was like, okay, then I'm going to tell you something I think is really freaking awesome. And that's these Artemis missions. And so then, you know, one kid's like, you know, that there's all this stuff in the Jet Propulsion Lab. And, you know, it was just so it kind of snowballed. But I did not know about the, this not, you know, Solar System Ambassador is kind of an ambitious title.
It's incredible. Yeah. But you sound like the kind of person that I'll share some information with you. You sound like you could be a future Solar System Ambassador to me.
There may be a NASA t-shirt hidden in my closet, right?
There you go.
So I thought that was really cool. Now, you mentioned the books. That's like a great segue for me. I love that. But coming from your perspective, so like for me as the S, right, as a science teacher, I always saw where the design aspect of the application of science always led itself to art. And you know, I grew up with that fixed mindset with that was like, I'm not good at art. And then it was like, wait a minute, I could use Photoshop and create awesome stuff. But you put a pencil in my hand and I was like, oh, you know, that was the struggle, you know? And so, and I'm sure you're in both of those worlds, but like, how do you see that with kids? Like breaking down that barrier, adding that art, it hooks a whole new group of kids.
Yeah, and I think you make a really good point. I mean, people don't think of the design aspect always as art, and I think it's, you know, it's equally important. I mean, there's art, the design and creativity, and, you know, they're intermarried. There's no question about it. And I think that, you know, drawing is one facet, like these classical, traditional things. You know, there's lots of well-known artists that are amazing that just still can't draw. It's a skill that anyone can learn, just like, you know, driving a car or anything else. But, you know, it's one skill. And I think that we live in a world today where art is so much more than that. And, you know, bringing that kind of creative sense to the science world is so much fun. I think, you know, there's a long tradition of art and science paired together from Da Vinci on. I mean, like, it's, you know, it's an amazing history. And, you know, the process of an artist creating is really similar to the scientific process. It's, you know, kind of mirrors each other, which is fun too.
I would love that. From my perspective, people would always be like, oh, it's, you know, it's just step 1 through 7. I'm like, no, it was freaking messy. And like sometimes they didn't finish one, they got inspired by something else. And it's not a linear process. And I think now as we shift these standards to really get at that with students and with some old school teachers, you know, that it's like, no, stop teaching it like that. If you really were observing it, It was pretty messy. And I, you know, it's interesting, like no discovery is going to happen unless you're willing to step out of the bounds of that, which is comfortable or known. And that's creativity. Right. So
totally.
Yeah. I don't know. So the book, right. Is about putting the arts in STEAM. Is there, you know, what else in the book like jumps right out that is kind of top of mind for you to explain it to somebody else, what your heart was behind that book?
Well, you know, what I wanted to do is I've been a teacher for 25 years, and I really just wanted to share, you know, all of the things that work for me. So, you know, I shared 18 of my favorite projects in just a huge range of different technologies from cardboard. And, you know, cardboard's amazing. You could do cardboard, glue, scissors. You could do almost anything all the way to, like, you know, AR, VR and robotics and things like that. So coding. So, you know, I think that, like, I was lucky when I started teaching, you know, I went to some of the senior teachers and, like, you know, they would give me some advice and some of their favorite projects. And I just think, like, well, you know, I have all of this knowledge and I wanted to share it. So that was really the process. So, you know, the first part is all about the mindset and sort of things you need to set up and, like, buy equipment and, like, you don't need to buy so much. And, you know, the second part is all the projects. And the third part is how to take it to that next level, collaborating and really working on sustainability and some other bigger facets that can kind of bring it to the next level.
Yeah. So it's almost like a legacy thing for you, right? Like you mentioned people did that for you. And that's interesting. You know, like I feel like maybe in education, we've almost become, as we move towards survival mode and, you know, with the pandemic and stuff, I think maybe some of that did cease. And so that's a really interesting point. I think maybe I'm going to get out there and start. Well, maybe I'll find people that want to listen. I don't know, but I love that idea. So, in the midst of that, one of the things that's been a radical shift for me is books in general, just whether they're personal development or, you know, developmental psychology, neuroscience, all these crazy things interest me now. And so I'm just curious, are there any books for you outside of those people that shared projects? Are there any authors or books that really impacted you as a person, educator, whatever? It's wide open.
Yeah, there's so many. I mean, like, I'm a really big fan of Dan Pink's work. He was a business person. I always like books written not by educators.
Is that Drive? Did he write Drive?
Yeah, right.
It's in my queue. So.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. Yeah, so, like, you know, he was really interesting because he was bringing a business mindset to education, and it was just really radical. And it really made a huge impact when it came out. And then I started following him. So yeah, that's a terrific one. Austin Kleon is another author. He wrote You Steal Like an Artist. So that kind of has some of that creativity and sort of how, you know, it's like you don't start the creative world. Like, you're picking up from all of these people that are ahead of you. So understanding that, like, you don't have to, like, create it all yourself, that it's a, you know, cultivating lots of different pieces from different places. So those are two favorites of mine.
Oh, I love that. It's funny. I found the same thing. Like, I do want to read some education books, but I've been studying innovation for the last probably year or so. And what a lot of those that have written about innovation have said is it becomes this ability to take two seemingly separate worlds and find a commonality that leads to that spark, right? Like, when you study Leonardo da Vinci, he's just to list the things that he was doing in a given week what does this dude have, like, ADHD or something? You know, like, he was just intensely curious about anything in life. And I think that's what maybe is missing for the innovative mindset for us as humans, let alone as educators, you know? So I think that's still in my queue. I might have bumped it for something else, but I'm going to put it back now. So, awesome. I'm trying to think, like, so 25 years, how has that kind of played out for you? I'm in year 25 as well. Oh, wow. Same district or hopped around a bit?
I started out hopping around, which is not bad. It's actually a good way to begin. So I started out in New York City, and then came out to Long Island. And worked in a couple of different districts. And then I really landed in one district that I spent most of my time in.
Yeah.
So I've been in that district for 24 years. I had a little bit of experience, and I went to school in the city. So I got all of my student teaching done at all of these different schools and got a different feel for the different ways they could work. Then I've just done lots of work with, you know, different groups like ISTE. So I've actually had exposure to lots of schools, and that helps. And I also teach college. So I teach at Five Towns College. So, you know, that's kind of an extension too. So you get, just to see the next level of things that happen sort of after the K-12 world. So it's been a little all over the place. I've been an art teacher for most of my career, but now I'm an ed tech coach. You know, in my district, they call it technology integration specialist. It's always a different name everywhere.
Yeah.
But it's nice being able to kind of go into other classrooms and share creativity and STEAM and, you know, help them with technology. So that part's been really fun.
Right. I teach two classes every other day, and then the rest of the time is that integration role. And I love finally having the balance. Like, I've never been out when I also had a class or had a class and been able to get out. And so you're like, oh, you have an idea and you have guinea pigs. Like, that is the best of worlds. So
perfect, right? Yeah.
Yeah. You get to try it out. Right. So, I'm going to jump back to your TEDx, right? Like, man, I walked in the end, and I'm going to be honest with you, as you probably heard Matthew Joseph say, the difference between envy and jealousy. And I think I was feeling them both at that moment, you know. So how did that kind of come about for you to get a TEDx, you know, you had shared a tiny bit of it in one of your sessions about being coached and, you know, you're doing it literally at Nicegate, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, so I have given a TED talk previously, which helped a lot. So I was part of, ISTE had a masterclass, and that really helps. So they kind of just teach you sort of like the TED philosophy. And I'm a big fan of TED Talks. It's hard not to be as an educator. So, you know, we got to work with TED a little bit. The company actually is based in New York, which is great. So they were kind of helping us and they were creating an app. So, you know, at the end of that, you kind of have a talk that you put together. And then you kind of pitch it to all of these different TEDx events. So, you know, I shared that talk locally on Long Island. And then I heard that NiceGate was starting one too, and I was really interested. So, you know, they've actually changed the program a little bit, but you know, if you want to try it, it's a fantastic program. So you could apply and then you kind of get a coach that helps you kind of, along with some tools, shape a story. And, you can tell a story about anything. You're just kind of sharing one idea. And then, you know, the great thing about NiceGate is that you get to give it at the NiceGate conference, which is fantastic. Right. I mean, that was a lot of fun to talk to that room.
Right. And then to come out of there and have, like, I saw your, it was, you know, for me, it was like, I caught the end and then I think I caught your session and in the middle was a book signing. And it was like, it was my first, I hate to use that word again, exposure, right? Like, it was the first time I had met you. So I'm like, oh man, I missed out on this and this and this, but this is a good makeup session. Right. So, but yeah, I think it's a really interesting venue to have that platform to share a story. And then that's probably why your session was so well attended, right? Like,
I'm sure, you know, I had one session before the talk, and then after the talk, everything was full. Yeah.
Isn't that, you don't want it to go the other way around, right? You know, so it's interesting. You could look at a person's name and title, but when you've connected with them visually, emotionally, it's like, yeah, I'm going to go do that. So that's really pretty awesome. And so I've got these questions that I kind of, you know, tend to weave into all my educators for anybody that might be listening. And I really started this podcast about burnout. And one of the things I love talking about ed tech tools or anything super engaging like animation or just creativity is it's like the antidote, man. It just something in you seeing the kids joyful. There's not as much planning, you know. So do you have a story? This is turning a hard corner, doing the best I can here, like that, where you kind of maybe went through a time of burnout and then pushed through on the other side.
Yeah, sure. Just one story.
Just one. A short one. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, you know, I think it happened. For so many teachers, I think the pandemic really was intensely difficult. I mean, like I had at first, you know, there was just all this fear. No one knew what was happening. But then, like, you know, we still have to work. So like when we were, you know, just digital for a little while, teaching virtually was unbelievably difficult. It's me and like 40 black boxes with initials. Right. And I just couldn't connect. So I had to just basically scrap everything I knew and start from scratch and find ways to connect to the kids using the technology. And it was things like Brush Ninja and animation and, you know, using some of the Adobe Express things. And actually, you know, the first thing that I did that really worked was the Getty Museum had the Getty Museum Challenge. So, you know, part of what I like to do as a educator, and I think this is always successful, is like participate. So like if you're doing the project along with the students, it's always going to be more powerful.
Always.
And I think it's important to kind of show that like you're invested in the same way that they are and you're learning and, you know, it puts everyone on the same playing field. So, you know, I did the project first. You had to create a famous painting with just three things you could find at home. So, you know, I made the iPad one of those things and I used the Procreate app and I made myself into a Van Gogh painting. And it kind of set it as a challenge. And then the students really, it was a great opportunity to really focus just on creativity because you don't get that opportunity in normal school. So this was a chance, you know, when everything was virtual, like nothing was working. So like, all right, let's just scrap it and we'll focus on creativity for a day or two. And it was kind of amazing. They came out with this really terrific artwork using all different tools. And you can really showcase their creative choices and the risks they take and the innovation they accidentally had along the way. And I think that was really powerful and kind of taught me the future of how I was going to teach, because from that point on, I really didn't go back to the way it was. And I just kind of, all right, well, these are the successful tools and people are really engaged. Work with that.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. That's such an awesome story and point there. Okay. We're going to go back. I wish I had my like, you know, Dreamweaver Wayne's World music queued up here. So you mentioned a little bit of this, like teachers that did something for you and shared these awesome projects, but, and your book may be this answer, but you got a teacher who's coming into education right now with everything that's going on, the world, you know, climate and public opinion and all that stuff. What's the advice you're giving them as they're walking in the door when I'm presuming at 25 years, your eyes are looking at how do you make a transition to still make a difference, but maybe, and I mean, that's me. I know I'm looking to retire, but not stop working, just right. Have a little more freedom. Right. So what's that advice you're giving to that new teacher as they walk in?
Well, you know, I think the most important thing we do as educators before even teaching anything is really make connections with kids. So I think you need to make those connections first if you want any of that learning to matter. So, you know, I really always advise young teachers to be authentic, to be real, and to connect personally. So like that's going to be different. It's challenging. There's different ways to do it. And every kid is different. So like, you know, you have to find the kind of way that works with each class because it changes dramatically. But once you kind of connect and people know that you really care, you know, that's really where you could start. And they're going to take risks for you that they might not take otherwise. They're on board. So like they want you to succeed too. So we learn together at that point. It's not, you know, me trying to pass on something that they don't want.
Right. Honestly, your last two answers have that same thing in there. You mentioned story earlier, and I'm sure you're aware of this, that the co-creative journey, right? Somebody does a great job telling the story, doesn't paint all the picture for you. You need to generate that in your head. That's why sometimes removing visuals makes the story more vivid because it's in the person's mind and every person gets to personalize that story. And I love that idea because the same thing happens in when you model and you learn with the kids and you connect with them. It's, oh man, it's so right on. And it's weird. It's like, I feel sometimes a restrictive curriculum. Okay. Sometimes I shouldn't have said that. I believe pretty much all the time it kills it. Yeah. It's like, oh, we got to get through. What good is getting through if there's nobody with you, you know? And like, absolutely. It just kills me. So, and that kind of leads me on to where, I mean, I have this grand vision and pie in the sky where I think we need to go with education. And so that's kind of the question is, where do you think maybe we are headed, or if you were in charge of it all, where should we be headed? Right.
That's my retirement dream. Yeah. To actually be able to, you know, stop being part of the system and actually, I would love
change
like a learning lab where you get to actually work with some of these new ideas. I think we're in a big change that's happening now in education, and it's hard to say, you know, if it's going to go the direction that would be beneficial or not. So I think that, you know, you need a lot more personalized learning. It needs to be a lot more focused on students. Obviously, you know, we were looking at things that like testing and you know, I think we've understood to some degree to move on from that. But, you know, I'm also a big fan of interdisciplinary learning. I don't think that, like, you know, you should be siloed in different respects. Like, I'm an artist, but I'm really interested in when we work with a science class, it's fascinating. I get to learn something new. It makes it more interesting for me. Like, that helps avoid burnout by itself, like learning and having fun in the classroom. So I think that, like, you know, the traditional classroom is kind of over. So that whole lecture style of teaching doesn't really, work in today's world. So, you know, exactly how that transforms is going to be a little difficult. Technology is obviously a big part of it.
Yeah, and it's moving so fast right now. Yeah,
it's crazy. I mean, like, we look at AI, it's just like, it's incredible. That's going to be part of our future. There's no question.
Yeah.
And, you know, for better and for worse.
And for both.
That's true.
Absolutely. We got to figure it out, right? It's funny. I mentioned somebody, it was ISTE. I think ISTE just asked, like, hey, you know, who are you learning from in AI? And I mentioned to Dan Fitzpatrick and, you know, a couple others out there that I really thought were awesome. But I'm like, I jumped in right away and I created this whole playlist, right? And I'm like, it feels like I want to take it back because, and it's not even 2 months old. It's unreal how much better I am, how much more is out there, like how many people are, and they're not dabbling anymore. They're jumping right in, you know, and it just, I don't know. So I think the same thing, right? Like this, we don't learn in silos. Like if you're naturally curious about something, you explore all facets that are required for you to solve that problem. Right. And so, I don't know. I think we're on the same page here. So, all right. So like I'm going to give you this shot, like plug all this stuff, Tim. Where can people find you, find the book, you know, hear you speak, watch your TED talk. That's on YouTube. I'll link all it, by the way, but I'm going to let you say it.
Yeah. So the book's available. It's from ISTE, but it's available wherever books are sold. So, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you buy books, you can get a copy. It's in the second edition now, which is great. So I just added some new things that updated. And the TED Talks, there's two of them out there that you could watch. One of them is on the TED site, and the one that I just recently gave at NiceGate is in process now, so you could find a copy on my site. And then the best thing to do is just follow me on social media. I'm on everything at Tim Needle. So, you know, different social media I treat differently. Like, you know, TikTok, I'm playing with animation, and Instagram, I'm taking pictures, and Twitter, I'm sharing notes. So it's never the same material, but whatever you're on, like, yeah, I'm at Tim Needles on everything. That's the easiest way to follow me.
I love that. And I felt that there's a pressure almost to be consistent. And I'm like, no, like my TikTok is all personal development, personal growth. I'm in my truck most of the time, not here in the studio. I don't care, but it's like deep life stuff. And here I want to have these conversations. And then YouTube are like, you know, Tinkercad tutorials and stuff. So it's, you know, I guess everybody knows that they have these facets of their life. So why don't we carry it on social media? Anyway, Tim Needles, I absolutely love that. Thanks so much for joining us. And just remember, regardless of where you are in this journey, and with this episode, it is up to you to add your art to your world and kick some class. We'll catch you guys in the next one.